Bereshis Rabbi Strachler, Rabbi Berman, the Kahn family, my dear colleagues at GPATS, Mrs. Shoshana Schechter, Mrs. Nechama Price, Rabbi Gedalia Berger, family and friends of Rabbi Kahn, and of course the Talmidot of Rav Kahn, both here and throughout the world. I've had the good fortune of giving several shiurim in this space over the course of several years, but none perhaps as meaningful as this morning. It is a great honor and a privilege to learn Torah together with you this morning, in honor and memory of my dear mentor and colleague, Rav Moshe Kahn, Moshe Yosef Ben Chaim Umechla, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha. I've chosen a sugya that is both timely and also complex, but one which I think captured the dichotomy that was so central to Rav Kahn's role as both a Malamei Torah and a Rebbe to so many. The sugya deals with competing demands of Mikra Megillah on the one hand, and the world of mitzvos more generally on the other, and the specific mitzvah of Talmud Torah in particular. It addresses this dichotomy, these competing demands that it makes upon us, and how to prioritize these different responsibilities and requirements. And I'd like to learn a passage together with you from the Gemara in Maseches Megillah, and to raise four critical questions on the Gemara, and hopefully develop an analysis that can address each and every one of those questions. If you look at the Gemara in Maseches Megillah in source number one in your source sheet, I apologize for the small font. The Gemara there quotes a pasuk from Megillas Esther, "V'yamim ha'elin iskarim v'na'asim b'chol dor v'ador, mishpacha mishpacha, medina medina, v'ir v'ir." And the Gemara wants to know, what is the phrase mishpacha mishpacha coming to teach us? That the days of Purim should be observed by each and every mishpacha. And the Gemara in the second line in source number one tells us, in the name of Rav Yehuda Marav, that what this phrase mishpacha mishpacha is coming to teach us, that each and every family should observe the laws of Purim, this teaches us that Kohanim b'avodasam, u'levim b'duchanam, v'yisrael b'mamadam, kulam mivatlim avodasin u'bayin l'shma mikra megillah. That each and every mishpacha, the representative mishpachot of Kohanim, of Levim, of Yisraelim, serving in the Beis HaMikdash, they all must be mivatel their avoda, u'bayin l'shma mikra megillah, to come in here and listen to the Megillah. The term mivatlim is an ambiguous term. Does it mean to nullify, and they would completely cancel that day's avoda to fulfill the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah? Or perhaps the word mevatli means to suspend, to merely delay. We must prioritize the hearing of the Megillah prior to attending to these other halachic obligations, like performing the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. And in the third line, the Gemara quotes a supporting brisa, Tani Nami Hachi, Kohanim b'avodasim, Levim b'duchanam, v'Yisrael b'mamadam, Kulam mevatlim avodasan, Uvayin l'shma mikra megillah. So we have here a remarkable statement in the Gemara that the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash would be suspended, would be nullified, canceled that day for the sake of listening to the mitzvah of Megillah, and that's what the phrase mishpacha, mishpacha is coming to teach us in Megillas Esther. And the Gemara extrapolates a remarkable conclusion from here. In the fourth line, Mikan samchut shel Beis Rebbe. From here, the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the author of the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah, Mikan Samchu Shel Beis Rebbe, Shemivatlin Talmud Torah, Ubayin L'shma Mikra Megillah. From here, Beis Rebbe concluded for themselves that we must set aside, be Mevatel Talmud Torah, to cancel, to suspend Torah study, for the sake of coming to listen and to hear a Megillas Esther being read, for the sake of Mikra Megillah. And they formulated the following Kavachomer. Kavachomer Me'avoda, U'ma'avoda Shi'chamura Mevatlinan, Talmud Torah lo kol shekein. If we suspend the avod in the Beis HaMikdash, which has a particular severity associated with it, how much more so should we suspend the study of Torah for the sake of listening to Mikra Megillah? And in this initial presentation of the Gemara, the avod in the Beis HaMikdash is treated as a davar chamor, as being more severe, more weighty than the study of Torah. But the Gemara immediately challenges that premise, that assumption, by telling us that we have another indication derived from the Psukim and Sefer Yehoshua, that perhaps Talmud Torah really has the upper hand. Talmud Torah is treated as more weighty, more important than even the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. And if you look at the fifth line in source number one, the Gemara switches gears and challenges, V'avoda chamura mitalmud Torah? Is it really the case that Avoda is more severe, more weighty than the study of Torah? V'haksiv, quoting the Psukim and Sefer Yehoshua in Parak Hay, if you look for a moment at source number two The Psukim and Sefer Yoshua, as Yoshua and the Jewish people are camped outside the city of Yericho, waiting to enter and to conquer the city, the Navi there tells us, Vayi biot Yoshua b'Yericho v'isayina v'yar, v'nei ish omed the negdo v'charbo shlufa b'yado. He saw an individual, somewhat mysteriously, with an unsheathed sword in his hand. Vayelech Yehoshua ilav v'yomer lo, halanu ata im l'tzareinu. In that setting, in that environment, Yoshua didn't know, is this friend or foe? Is this an enemy or is this a supporter of the Jewish people? Halanu ata im l'tzareinu. And this individual responds, Vayomer lo, ki ani sar tzva Hashem ata bati. And in context, it seems like the sar tzva Hashem, this malach, this mysterious individual sent to encounter Yoshua, is meant to give him reassurance. I'm here not to attack. I'm here not to punish. I'm here to support you. I'm here to help you conquer the city of Yericho. However, the Gemara takes this in a very different direction. And the Gemara's opinion, the image of a charbosh lufa biado, of an unsheathed sword, is too intimidating, it's too punishing, too threatening to be treated as someone who's there to support and really to help the Jewish people in their conquest. And instead, the Gemara interprets the pasuk as being an individual who's coming to rebuke the Jewish people and potentially to punish them for some transgression. And if you look at the continuation of the Gemara in Megillah and source number one, the sixth line in, the Gemara continues and says that what the message of this individual was Amar lo, emesh bitaltem tamishal ben arbayim, v'yaksha bitaltem tamut Torah. There are two sins that you've been engaged in, two violations that I could hold you accountable for and to punish you for. Number one, yesterday afternoon you were mevatel, the tamishal ben arbayim, you didn't offer the daily korban of the korban atamid. V'yaksha v'now bitaltem tamut Torah, lying in wait outside the city late at night, there is no battle going on. Right now, you and the people should be engaged in Talmud Torah. You're being mevatel Talmud Torah. And Yeshua questioned this ish and wondered, what is it that you're coming for? Which of the two are you coming to punish us for with the unsheathed sword? Amar lo, and the Sar Tzva Hashem responded, Yeshua asked him, Amar lo, aleza mehen bata? Amar lo, the Sar Tzva Hashem responded, ata bati, I'm coming for the current aveira, namely that of Bittul Talmud Torah. Tosfos on the spot of Maseches Megillah reads into the narrative in the phrases Halanu Ata Im Litzareinu and the phrase Atabati, the references to the Korban Atamid and the references to Talmud Torah. Halanu Ata comes from the pasuk Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Im Litzareinu, this is the Korban Atamid that protects us from attack, from tzarot that face the Jewish people. Atabati comes from the pasuk of Atah Kitfu Lachem, as Ashira Hazos, the very mandate to write a Sefer Torah. And the resounding answer was that I'm coming to punish you for the Aveira of Bittul Talmud Torah, for nullifying, for negating, canceling that day's study, the involvement in Talmud Torah. And the Gemara goes on in Megillah in source number one and says that immediately Yeshua's response was to engage in deep study together with the nation. Miyad. Vayalan Yehoshua balai lahu b'tocha emek, which the Gemara interprets to mean residing in the depths of Torah study. Am Rabbi Yochanan melamed shalan ba'omka shel halacha. We see from here that Yehoshua was involved in the study of Torah ba'omka, the depth of studying halacha. V'am Rav Shmuel bar Unya gadol tamat Torah yoter me'akravas tmidim. Shenemar atabati. We see from here that Torah study, tamat Torah, trumps. It's more severe, more weighty than even the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara wonders, so which one is it? Is the Avodah more severe and weighty than Talmud Torah? Or is Talmud Torah more severe and weighty than the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash? And the Gemara resolves this contradiction by saying, Lo kasha, hadirabim hadiyachid. It all depends. Talmud Torah dirabim, that's weightier than the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Talmud Torah diyachid, though, the Avodah is more severe, more weighty, more important than the Torah study of that individual. And when plugging that back into the two examples, it appears like the study of Torah in the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, that had the character of Talmud Torah diyachid, and therefore the Avodah was more chamor. But Yeshua and the camp that was outside of Yericho, so that Talmud Torah had the quality of being Talmud Torah derabim, and as a result, that form of study was more important, was gedolah, even than the hakravas tmidim in the Beis HaMikdash. I'd like to focus on four questions together with you surrounding this Gemara and hopefully to develop an approach that can address each and every one of these questions. first question I wanted to pose was one of definition. The Beis Medrash of Rebbe was defined as Talmud Torah D'Yachid. You have an entire Beis Medrash of individual studying, no less of a teacher than Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, an entire Beis Medrash studying together with him, and that's being characterized, that's being defined as Talmud Torah D'Yachid, and therefore the Avod is treated as being more chamor. But Yeshua, that was residing in the camp, that's defined as Talmud Torah D'Rabim, and hence treated as being more severe, more weighty, than even the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. What is the defining distinction between Rabbi Yehuda Anasi and his Beis Medrash, characterized as Talmud Torah D'Yachid, and Yehoshua and his camp that were defined as Talmud Torah D'Rabim? Just to heighten the question, in somewhat of a different sugya in Maseches Brachos in source number 10, the Gemara there describes that very same Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. And the Gemara there says that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi used to start shir very early every morning, even before it was acceptable to read and to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. He would begin early, and at least in the Tosfos HaRashi's opinion, he would end late. He would start before the Zman Kriyat Shema, and shir would continue until after the Zman Kriyat Shema, 3 hours into the day, had already expired. And the Talmidim were wondering, we see Rabbi Yehuda Anasi giving shir from the morning until the midday. When does he fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema? We don't see him ever fulfilling and reciting the parashios of Kriyat Shema. And if you look at the Gemara in Brachos in Source 10, the Gemara tells us that Amar Lei Rav the Rabbi Chia, Lo Chazina Lei the Rebbe de Mekabel Alei Malchut Shamayim. When does our Rebbe fulfill the mitzvah of saying Kriyat Shema and be Mekabel upon himself, O Malchut Shamayim? Amar Lei Bar Pachtei, B'sha Shemavir Yadav Alpanav, Mekabel Alav O Malchut Shamayim. You'll notice, look carefully during shir. There's a moment every shir where he puts his hand over his eyes, where he pauses for a moment. It's at that moment, for that brief moment, that he's mekabel upon himself, O Malchut Shamayim, for continuing with the shir that he's delivering to us. And the Tosfos HaRashi is very bothered by this. How can Torah study trump the fulfillment of mitzvos? In particular, the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Yud Aleph tells us that for most individuals, aside from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and individuals like him, for most individuals, Torah study must be set aside, mafsik in the Kriyat Shema. How could Rabbi Yehuda Anasi not cancel, not delay the continuation of the shir to properly fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema? And in that one moment to say, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, in the Tosfos HaRashi's opinion, is clearly insufficient. In his opinion, all three parshios have to be said to fulfill the mitzvah. And the Tosfos HaRashi answers in source number 11, apparently this was different. Yechidim, individuals, must set aside their Torah study to fulfill Kriyat Shema, but this was a context of Talmud Torah D'Rabim. And Talmud Torah D'Rabim takes precedence over the proper full fulfillment of the mitzvah. In that context, saying Shema Yisrael alone would suffice. And it's remarkable. The very same Beis Medrash of Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, where an hour Gemar Maseches Megillah is being defined as Talmud Torah D'Yachid, in that context is being defined as Talmud Torah D'Rabim. So how do we define individual Torah study, and how do we define public Torah study? What is the definition between these two categories? I'd like to raise a second question, and that pertains to the concept itself. Without getting too far into the more general question, do we apply the principle of Osik B'mitzvah Pater Min HaMitzvah to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? It seems awfully surprising and somewhat shocking that Talmud Torah D'Rabim would take precedence over other halachic obligations, that it should be treated as being more chamor than the avod and the Beis HaMikdash, that it should be treated as being more chamor than the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. When does Torah study ever take precedence over the proper fulfillment of mitzvah of the performance of mitzvos? In fact, Yerushalmi in Maseches Brachos tells us that a person who's lomed, shalom and aslaso, someone who studies, rather than perform the mitzvos or studies without the intent, or with the intent not to perform the mitzvos that one is engaging in study of, such an individual better had they not breathed the air within this world. A remarkable, remarkable critique. So how is it possible that Talmud Torah D'Rabim should take precedence over the performance of other mitzvos, namely the avod and the Beis HaMikdash, and the reading of the Megillah? I'd like to raise a third question in how the Rambam codifies this Gemara. If you look at source number 4, the Rambam in Hilchos Megillah, Parak Aleph, Halacha Aleph, in the second line in, tells us, "Afilu kohanim b'avodasam, mivat l'mavodasam ubayin l'shma mikra megillah." Even if kohanim are engaged in that day's avodah on the Beis HaMikdash, they must negate, suspend the performance of that avodah to come listen to the reading of Megillas Esther to Mikra Megillah. And then the Rambam continues, "V'chein mevatlim Talmud Torah l'shma Mikra Megillah, kavachomer l'shar mitzvot shel Torah shekula nidchen mipnei Mikra Megillah." The Rambam goes on to say that we also negate Torah study for the sake of listening to the Megillah being read. And as the Lechem Mishnah notes in source number 12, he's perplexed by the Rambam's codification of our sugya. The Gemara made a clear distinction. Talmud Torah d'yachid were mevatel for the sake of Mikra Megillah, but Talmud Torah d'Rambam takes priority. That takes precedence. If you look at the Rambam's words in source number 4, the Rambam makes no distinction. The Rambam writes, "V'chein mevatlin Talmud Torah l'shmua Mikra Megillah." He makes no distinction between Talmud Torah d'yachid and Talmud Torah d'Rambam, no distinction between private study and public study. What happened to the Gemara's distinction and the Rambam's codification of the halacha? And the Lechem Mishnah is forced to say that in the Rambam's opinion, the continuation of the sugya later on in that daf in Megillah must have reversed course, it must have undone the earlier conclusion, and as a result, the Rambam omitted it from his codification of the halacha. But certainly it's a difficulty. Why does the Rambam omit the distinction between Talmud Torah d'Yachid and Talmud Torah d'Rambam? I'd like to focus on one additional difficulty that is a particularly knotty issue. When the Gemara here looks to source, Yoshua's immediate response to the Sar Tzva Hashem's rebuke of Atabati, the way the Gemara presents Yoshua's response, if you look three lines from the bottom in source number 1, is to say, Miyad vayalan Yehoshua balayla hahu betocha emek. Immediately, Yoshua responded with vayalan Yehoshua balayla hahu betocha emek. He was lan ba'om kashel halacha. And it's a particularly knotty issue because, number 1, it was certainly not miyad. Where do those psukim come from in Sefer Yoshua? It's not in Perek Hay, as they were waiting to conquer the city of Yericho, but rather those psukim come from Yoshua Perek Chet, as they're waiting to attack the city of Ai for the second time. And furthermore, the pasuk, Vayalan Yehoshua balayla hu betocha emek, does not exist. No such pasuk exists in all of Navi. If you look at source number 5, the psukim in Yoshua Parachet, the Gemara here is splicing two psukim and unifying them together, integrating them together in one expression. If you look at that section in source number 5, Yoshua Parachet, in pasuk Tet, Yoshua initially sends a group of soldiers to lie in ambush outside the city of the Ai. And after he sends them, the Navi tells us, Vayalan Yoshua balayla hu betocha am. Yoshua resided, he slept that evening, not with the group that was lying in ambush outside the city, but betocha am, in the machaneh, in the camp, together with the rest of the nation. And it's only later on, after he then brings all of his battalion, all of the troops that he was leading to battle to the Ai, approaching the city from the front end, only then, as he's waiting in front of the city, does the Navi then tell us in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayelech Yehoshua balayla hu betocha emek. The Gemara here in Megillah is splicing two psukim, integrating them into one, a pasuk that does not exist. It certainly did not happen immediately thereafter, miyad. And furthermore, such a pasuk doesn't actually exist. In fact, if you look at the Gemara in Maseches Erevin, in a parallel, albeit different context and different focus in that Gemara, if you look at the Gemara in Erevin that also quotes this drasha, you'll see the corrected form of that drasha. If you look at the third line in source number 7, the Gemara there tells us, Miyad vayelech Yehoshua balayla hu betocha emek. Vam Rab Yochanan milamed shahalach ba'om kashel halacha. There the pasuk is quoted accurately. Vayelech Yehoshua balayla hu betocha emek. He was holech ba'om kashel halacha. And yet, our Gemara in Maseches Megillah does not quote the pasuk or the drash in that way. It opens the phrase with Vayalan Yehoshua, that he was lan ba'omka shel halacha. Quite perplexing. If you look at Tosus in source number 6, Tosus in Maseches Megillah, Tosus explains, don't be too troubled by the shoddy quoting of the psukim. V'derech hashas hu lekatzer hapsukim u'la'arvam yachad. that is typical characteristic within the context of the Gemara, to quote psukim, to integrate them together, to take parts of one pasuk, parts of another pasuk, to shorten and truncate it, to integrate them together. That is the Derech HaShas. It might be the Derech HaShas, but perplexing nonetheless. Why did the Gemara here in Megillah choose to misquote the pasuk when it could have quoted it accurately, as we find in the Gemara in Maseches Erevin? And in fact, partially on this basis, the Radak in his commentary on Sefer Yeshua says that this whole drasha in the Gemara, that Yeshua was involved in deep Torah study, ba'omka shel halacha, this entire drash is pretty rachok from the pshat in the psukim, from the surface level meaning of the text in Sefer Yeshua. He says, number one, Shas HaMelchama is not Shas Talmud Torah. Why was there even an expectation that the troops lying in ambush outside a city would be involved in deep Torah study at that moment? Furthermore, he says, this pasuk does not appear miyad afterward, but as we saw, three chapters later. And finally, in source number 9, the second to last line, he writes, Va'od ki kosef hadrash hazeh ta'a b'pasuk. Whoever was darshaning this pasuk made a great ta'us, was mistaken in how they read the psukim. Ki beis psukim heim. It's two distinct psukim in Sefer Yehoshua. Va'yalan Yehoshua sofo b'tocha am. The Radak notes this difficulty, and on that basis says the drash in the Gemara is pretty rachok. It's hard to really accept as the straightforward reading, you know, of the psukim. In order to address each of these four questions, number one, what is the definition of Talmud Torah de Yachid? What is the definition of Talmud Torah de Rabim? Number two, what allows Talmud Torah de Rabim to push aside and to delay the performance of mitzvot, the avod in the Beis HaMikdash, Kriyas HaMegillah? Why did the Rambam choose to omit the distinction in the Gemara between Talmud Torah D'Yachid and Talmud Torah D'Rabim? And finally, some sort of theory as to the puzzling treatment of the Gemara Maseches Megillah to the Psukim and Sefer Yehoshua. I think we need to address exactly how we define each of the two categories of Talmud Torah D'Yachid and Talmud Torah D'Rabim. And if you look at Rashi, back in source number 1, the last Rashi, before the next source in source number 2, Rashi in Dibar Maschil HaDerabim, Rashi adopts a pretty remarkable definition as to what qualifies as Talmud Torah Derabim. Rashi there says, what qualifies, what is defined as Talmud Torah Derabim? Dehasam Kol Yisrael Havu. Talmud Torah Derabim is not defined as one shiur, an entire Beis Medrash, an entire yeshiva, or an entire continent for that matter. Talmud Torah D'Rabim is defined solely by Kol Yisrael, having all members of Am Yisrael engaged in study. When you have all of Am Yisrael engaged in study, that qualifies as, that constitutes Talmud Torah D'Rabim. Furthermore, if you look at the Ran in source number 15, the Ran adopts a similar definition. The Ran in the last Dibar Maschil in source 15, Mikan Samchu, the Ran writes, Mikan Samchu Shabbos Rebbe Shemavatlin Talmud Torah Mishum de Begemara Maskinan Davoda Chamira. Avod is more chamor than Talmud Torah, specifically mi Talmud Torah di Yachid. What is the definition of Talmud Torah di Yachid? Klomar, She'ein Talmud Torah Shal Kol Yisrael. Any form of Torah study that is not the Torah study of Kol Yisrael, the entirety of the Jewish people, all segments of the Jewish people, is defined as Talmud Torah D'Yachid. To qualify, to rise to the level of Talmud Torah D'Rabim, it has to be Kol Yisrael involved in that study. And just to play out the counterpoint for a moment, there's a tshuva of the Tashbetz that Rabbi Akiva Eger quotes in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch that argues that any context of teaching the Tinoko Shel Beis Rabban that would automatically rise to the level of Talmud Torah D'Rabim in terms of its severity. Even just one class of the Tinokel Shabbos Rabban, that has the status of being Talmud Torah D'Rabim. Furthermore, if you look at the Me'iri here in source number 16, the Me'iri toys with exactly what is the definition of Yachid versus Rabim. And he starts out by saying in the second line, what is Talmud Torah D'Yachid? Rotzeh lomar kol yeshiva shi mityachedet l'rav echad. Any yeshiva, any base medrash that is designated for one particular Rebbe, one particular leader, if they all come under the aegis, the leadership of that one individual, that's defined as Talmud Torah Shel Yachid. Hashel Rabim Ratzolomer Shem Knufya Shel Yisrael Gedola. If you have a larger gathering with multiple constituents, that would rise to the level of Talmud Torah Shel Rabim. But Rashi and the Ran both define Tamei Torah Sherabim as being Shel Kol Yisrael. It has to be all of Am Yisrael to be defined as Tamei Torah Sherabim. And with this definition, I think we could come back and address several of the questions that we raised along the way. Number one, why did the Rambam omit the distinction between Tamei Torah Shel Yachid and Tamei Torah Shel Rabim? The Drisha, it's appropriate to quote that source in this context, in source number 17 answers that perhaps the Rambam omitted the distinction between Tamei Torah Shel Yachid versus Tamei Torah Shel Rabim because the definition is so far-reaching, it is so unattainable that the halacha is practically obsolete. It's no longer relevant. When would you ever have Kol Yisrael involved in one joint pursuit, one setting of Torah study? And because the definition, the standard is set so high, the halacha itself becomes almost obsolete. If you look at the last line in source number 17, the Drisha says, "V'zeh necha t'lo shtamit shum posek milo hodia t'tama Torah shel Rabim eino nidcha mipnei mikra megillah." Now we can understand why no posek ever quotes the halacha that Tamei Torah Shel Rabim takes priority over Mikra Megillah. It's unattainable. The standard is set so high, it's simply unachievable. And I think with this, we could also better understand the puzzling treatment of the Psukim that the Gemara Maseches Megillah suggested and offered in reading the Psukim in Yehoshua. Why do we need the first Pasuk? Why did we splice Vayalan Yehoshua Balailahu with the end of the following Pasuk, Vayelech Yehoshua Balailahu B'toch HaEmek? In the context of the Gemara and Megillah, we're making a distinction between Tamei Torah Shel Rabim and Tamei Torah Shel Yachid. Tamei Torah Shel Rabim is defined as Kol Ha'am. The second pasuk is necessary because of the imagery, Vayelech B'toch HaEmek, Vayelech from the language of Halicha, of Halacha, of a way of life, B'toch HaEmek, the depths, the Omka Shel Halacha. But you don't have in that context, as Yehoshua is waiting outside the city of Ai with his battalion, with his troop, you don't have Kol Ha'am. Where do you find Yehoshua residing amongst Kol Ha'am? And where can we presume that the same Vayelech B'toch HaEmek was also taking place? Not only when they were lying outside the city, you know, waiting for the battle to unfold, but the night beforehand, before they went to battle, when Yehoshua was Vayalen B'toch Ha'am, amongst the entire nation, that's where we find as well the Vayelech B'toch HaEmek, but in the context that is B'toch HaAm, amongst the entire nation, B'toch HaMachane, where you have Kol Yisrael involved in that pursuit of Torah study. And I think with this we can also understand the concept as to why Tamei Torah Shel Rabim might take priority over the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. One way of formulating this point is suggested by the Magen Avraham, the Chassam Sofer, in his comments on Shulchan Aruch in source 13 and 14. And essentially, the point highlights the language in the Gemara and Megillah. You have to be mevatel, Tamei Torah, ubayin lishmoa, to come here, Mikra Megillah, in a communal context, in a larger framework. If you're engaged in Tamei Torah Shel Yachid, there are larger frameworks to pursue. But if you're involved in Tamei Torah Shel Rabim, defined as Kol Yisrael, what is the larger framework in which you're going to hear Mikra Megillah? You have Kol Yisrael together involved in the pursuit of Torah study. There is no greater context. There is no bayin lishmoa. That is the context to hear a Mikra Megillah. And in fact, the Chassam Sofer says, even in the Gemara's distinction, all the Gemara was saying is that you don't have to leave the Beit Knesset. You don't have to leave the Beis Medrash to go listen to Megillah someplace else. But of course, where Kol Yisrael are gathered in Torah study, they suspend their Torah study to listen to Megillah. There's just no other place to go, no better place to listen than in the context of Kol Yisrael. But I'd like in the final three minutes that I have, I'd like to develop a different idea as to how to understand Tamei Torah Shel Rabim being Docha Mikra Megillah and use that as a springboard to reflect more generally on Rav Kahn's role as a Malami Torah and as a Rebbe to so many. I'd like to suggest that perhaps what the Gemara here is teaching us is that Tamei Torah Shel Rabim, defined as Kol Yisrael, is not merely a quantitative increase. You have 50 people studying, 100 people studying, 1,000, 10,000 people studying. Tamei Torah Shel Rabim is a qualitatively different experience. It's not only a quantitative increase. Number one, when you have Kol Yisrael studying together, involved in Torah, in Torah study, there's an experiential component to that that looks to reenact and recreate Mamad Har Sinai. There's a reacceptance of the covenant that we entered into so many years ago at Sinai. We recreate and reenact that by having Kol Yisrael come together as part of the study of Torah. There's an experiential component to it. And number two, there's also the aspect of identification. By placing yourself in that context, you identify yourself with the nation, with the Am, that is in relationship, that is in covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And these two aspects, the experiential component and the aspect of identification with a community, it's not about the Torah study per se. It's not about the act of study that's for the sake of implementation, that we should apply ideas of halomet shlamanas lasos. This has a different component altogether, and for that reason, perhaps this form of Talmud Torah derabim of Kol Yisrael, the reenacting of the covenant at Sinai, as well as the identification with that community, that can take priority even over the performance of other mitzvos. I think when thinking about this application to Mikra Megillah is particularly meaningful, because after all, the Megillah is all about Kima Vekiblu, Kima Masha Kiblu Kfar, it's all about the reenactment and the re-entrance into that covenant, but Talmud Torah Derabim achieves that already, and therefore, Talmud Torah Derabim is Mevatel, the reading of Mikra Megillah. And I think it is this categorical distinction between Talmud Torah D'Yachid and Talmud Torah Derabim that captures the dichotomy of Rav Kahn's impact as a Malami Torah and as a Rebbe. Irrespective of class sizes or the number of Talmidot sitting in front of him, irrespective of the hundreds and thousands of students he taught over the course of many years and decades, his teaching always had the quality of Talmud Torah D'Yachid. He always taught the individual student who was seated in front of him, who was learning with him, who he was guiding in their personal lives. It always had the quality of Talmud Torah D'Yachid. He was a Rebbe to the aspiring student who desired a chelek b'Torat Yisrael. He was a Rebbe to the inexperienced student who needed endless patience and someone to go over the Gemara together with them, time and time again, over and over again, the endless wellspring of patience. He was a Rebbe to the overconfident student who perhaps needed to be reminded to be more deliberate and careful, to read the source again a second, a third, or a fifth, or a tenth time to get it perfectly accurately. He was a Rebbe to the thirsting student who yearned to be challenged by the rigors of advanced Torah study and not to hold back on any level. He was a Rebbe to the shy student who needed to discover her voice and to know that her perspective mattered. He was a Rebbe to the disillusioned student who was searching for a deeper connection to Amud Torah and a better understanding of the halachic process as it applied to her life. He was a Rebbe to the self-doubting student who needed someone to believe in them even more than they were able and allowed themselves to believe in themselves and to instill within them the conviction that they are capable. He was a Rebbe to the struggling student facing life's challenges who sought a caring and understanding and a compassionate ear. Despite teaching thousands of students, Rav Kahn taught the individual students. His teaching was always defined mebchinat Talmud Torah D'Yachid. It was always marked by the attention paid to the individual student who was seated in front of him. But Rav Kahn's teaching also had the quality of Talmud Torah D'Rabim. I've learned over the years from listening carefully to my students that being a woman in the Orthodox community, for whom rigorous Torah study in all of its breadth and depth is a vital religious intellectual outlet for them in their Avodas Hashem, that occupying that space has the potential to be very isolating and to be a lonely experience. One can feel that they are the only one. Does anyone else share the same interests, the same things that drive me and that animate me that I am passionate about? And it also has the potential to be a demeaning experience at times as well. Having the value of a core aspect of one's avodas Hashem and religious personality questioned, and having one's motivation occasionally suspected, can be quite difficult and challenging. Rav Kahn created a global and multi-generational community of women learners. It created a community for each and every one of his students to identify with. He created a fraternity that was larger than any one of them, a larger fraternity that they can identify with and be a part of. He created a fellowship that is both a privilege and uplifting to connect with. He created an experience of Tamei Torah Derabbim, that experience of being together with others to identify with that particular community. And these two aspects, Tamei Torah D'Yachid and Tamei Torah D'Rabbim, encapsulate two dimensions of Rav Kahn's powerful impact as a Malami Torah and a Rebbe. The program will now conclude with the recitation of the Kehel Malei and the Kaddish D'Rabbanan that follows.